Johnson. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited to be joined this next hour by my very special guest, my LinkedIn buddy, now friend in the real world, Ernest Krim III. Welcome, Ernest.
Hey, what's up, Maggie? Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and to meet you virtually.
Yeah, for real. And my privilege, very humbled to have you come and share what I think is so important, and that is making elements of Black history and why it's important accessible to everybody. I think your videos and what you share on LinkedIn and TikTok and all these other places, it's so valuable. We're going to talk all about that. Folks, if you are enjoying my conversation with you last hour, we were talking about Memorial Day, comparing what President Biden has done for veterans with the former MAGA president. Don't worry. We'll be revisiting that topic tomorrow with Navy veteran Tom Paulsowitz. We'll talk more about the PACT Act, which Joe Biden signed in 2022, that immediately fast-forwarded claims that veterans had made for medical coverage presumptive. We'll talk more about the mechanics of that tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss that. We got Tom Paulsowitz, Navy veteran, tomorrow. Please lock it in for tomorrow, everybody. But today, again, being joined by Mr. Krim III, I asked you for a bio because I always like to know how people want to be described themselves, so I get that right. You describe yourself as a public teacher. I know you taught in high school for a while, an anti-racist educator, and here's the part that I think is so important, a hate crime victor. Thank you for talking about it in those terms. I think that affirmation that we can be victorious over this kind of thinking and these sorts of interactions. And I wanted to not beat around the bush at all, but jump right to that sound and let people know, because this is kind of what lifted you up into the stratosphere of online engagement was when you shared this video. It was an interaction that you had with a woman back in 2016, if I'm getting the date correct. You were with your wife hanging out, and an altercation took place. You're only going to hear bits and pieces of it, but the N-word's in there, which we've bleeped out, and you can't see the video, but folks, the lady spits at Mr. Krim. Let's take a bit of a listen here.
My phone on my head.
Yeah. And I was so moved by, one, the fact that you got it so clearly on video, and that what you did is you took that and you wrote a book about how Black history saved you. Tell us what that moment meant and what you mean when you say Black history saved you, how that was such an important part of you becoming a victor over that hate crime.
Yeah, I think one of the foundational pieces of that is a study that I have as you begin to read my book. And it's a study from 2012 from a professor at Harvard University and the University of Pittsburgh. It essentially says that Black students who are taught to have racial pride perform better academically. I think it's a lot more to that. It's layered. What I take from that is if you know who you are, if you're taught to have racial pride in this country as a group of people who are taught to not like yourself, then you will have more self-determination. You'll be willing to fight through things, through adversity. You have a better understanding of why some things might happen. And that's case in point for me. What happened to me on July 30 of 2016 was something that, of course, I would never want to happen to me, but due to my prior knowledge and studying and teaching, I was prepared to move forward with it. And that's why I call my book, and my claim is, you know, Black History Saved My Life. And it's actually a few different things. One, when I was in college, I almost flunked out, took some Black history courses, did a complete 180 because I was so passionate about it, right? And then in this situation right here too, when I'm dealing with this hate crime, I have the wherewithal mentally to not say, well, this is a bad thing that happened, but to say it's a bad thing that happened. And I know I deserve better. And in fact, I will prove so. So whether I was successful or not, I knew I was going to be victorious over this because I was going to use this as a way to teach people, not just about the overt racism we deal with, but the intricacies of the system that harm us on a daily basis.
Yeah, again, so powerful. The book is titled How Black History Saved My Life. You can find it. Ernest Krim III is the author. That idea that seeing yourself in history, seeing your culture represented in the history that's taught in a classroom through a positive, affirming lens, so critical. And the thing that continues to be really difficult for me to even get my head around is all the anti-woke and anti-CRT bills have baked into them this premise that a white student will feel bad if they learn something great about Black people, or if Black and brown folks' history is included in the teaching of history, which, if you break that down, is sort of like, well, we're okay with Black and brown students feeling bad because they'll just learn all about white history, and it's fine if those the Black and brown kids can feel crappy. We're just, so long as the white kids are comfortable. Is it, am I getting the irony and the tension there wrong? I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. It is absolutely ridiculous, and my time as an educator disproves that theory completely, because for 10 out of the 12 years I taught in a diverse community in a town 45 minutes from Chicago, Joliet, and our school was majority low income, had Hispanic kids, Black kids, white kids. Some were from urban environments, suburban environments. Some were from small rural towns 20 minutes away. We had kids there who would sometimes drive to school with pickup trucks that had Confederate flags on the back. I had kids in my class with that same ideology who loved my class. Yes. And I've just, the same way that I teach online and in person during speaking engagements is the same way I taught back then, probably more uncut and unfiltered. Right. Because, you know, then when we're talking with kids and the doors are closed, like, we're having real conversations. This actually helps our kids better understand their place in society, and also to, again, just why things are the way they are. And I think it's also important for our kids to understand, regardless of your racial background, that these issues have never been simply Black and white. That's right. How it was framed, of course, because my ancestors, yes, they were enslaved because of their skin color, their ancestry, but there have always been people, a variety of different backgrounds, who have fought against this. So what we miss out on not teaching Black history is not just everybody seeing positive role models and positive people who are doing great things in our history and beyond, but also we're missing out on teaching white kids, like, yo, you know, there were people that look like you in the 1600s, Quakers, for example, who fought against this too. Why do we always feel we have to frame American history when we teach it to white kids as being something that is let's say the executive branch facing? We have to always lead with presidents. We have to always lead with wars and the congressmen. What about the regular everyday person that said, you know what, George Washington, you look like me, but I don't like what you're doing.
Right.
Those people exist too. And we have to teach about them, just like we teach about Benjamin Banneker, for instance.
Yeah, those are the heroes, right? If you want to engage with the long arc of history bending towards justice, it's very rarely done sort of by the one or two leaders of the moment. It's done by regular people who look at something and say, no, not good enough. That is not good enough. We have to make this better. And I think celebrating and giving people access points to understanding those people throughout history, whether they're Black and brown folk or white folk, or Jewish folk, or whom Muslim folk, that begins to create an enabling mechanism. It's empowering to young people. And that degree of understanding that, oh, this is complicated, but I can learn about this in all of its complexity and be well-armed through that sense of really integrated and involved education. I remember I had great teachers growing up from the very early days that were very careful and deliberate about sharing with us in an age-appropriate way as we got older, all of these different elements of history and all of these complexities. It wasn't sort of, you know, like pick up the textbook and here you go, that's what it is. They were great at sort of thinking outside the textbook and bringing those things in. Every time I would learn about something new or outside of the traditional, you know, pedagogy for education, my brain would light up. It's like, oh, I'm being given this like special super secret decoder ring to why things are the way that, like, it literally made my brain engage in this way that made me, it's hard to describe, but I think, you know, your experience as a teacher and watching kids that might have that Confederate flag sticker on their car or truck get excited about learning right? It's the hidden history. And oh my gosh, the audacity of folk to say, can it not be hidden? Can we actually have this in a textbook?
Right.
What is up?
We're literally disproving the narratives these kids have been taught, because as an educator, I realize in hindsight that Black students and Latino students of color, like, implicitly we're taught to dislike ourselves, because we only see ourselves enter the picture when we are, you know, slaves, when we're fighting. And we see the same few people, powerful, amazing people, who aren't given that complexity even still. We talk about, right, you know, Harriet in one way, Frederick in one way, yes, Dr. King in one way, Rosa Parks in one way. We don't even look at the various ways in which they had to navigate through fighting for justice, right? So, but when we see white people in history, we often see the heroic nature. We don't look at the complexities of that, right? So I even challenge folks to understand that as a history teacher in your history classes, we have the, to me, I feel I'm biased, of course, but we have the most important role, because we're helping frame how your students think, because it's you. You help as a parent, first and foremost, right? If you go to a religious institution, they help too. The media helps too. The friends help too. But we are the ones that are viewed as like the pastors almost.
Yes.
Because oftentimes, even at that age, kids won't even question many things. I have to encourage kids. Look, when I tell you something that sounds unbelievable, ask me where I got this so I can show you. Don't just believe it because I'm up here, right? We're shaping their imagination. You can only imagine what you can be if you've seen a prior example. Literally, right, that's how your brain works.
Yes.
So if I can show you that this is a person that looked like you that did this, you can, you'll believe in the present
day that
you can do it too, right? It's as simple as that. It's science, but it's social science.
Social science. The brain works in ways we know these things. I like history as church, because preach, Ernest Krim, history educator, extraordinary anti-racist activist. He's my guest this afternoon. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back with Mr. Ernest Krim III, author of Black History Saved My Life.
Diversity and diversity.
It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication lead to complication. My emancipation don't fit your equation. I was on the humble, you on every station. Someone play young Lauren like she done. But remember not to game the one of the sun. Everything you did has already been done. I know all the tricks from bricks to Kingston. My ting done, major kingdom, one wrong.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. It's hard for me to talk over Lauren Hill. I'd rather
believe there are some laws against that.
Talking over that should be. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour plus, if I get lucky, by my friend Ernest Krim III, anti-racist educator. I wanted to just, oftentimes when I'm talking to white folks or I hear somebody who's white that's says something really messed up, and I, hey, you know, that's not cool. do you know how that sounds? Or like, where did that come from? Why do you think that's okay? I get a lot of, well, I'm not racist. It wasn't my ancestor. Like all of this rigmarole. And then I have to go through the, I'm not asking anybody to be sorry for being white. You're no more responsible for your race than a black person is. I'm not asking you to apologize for what your ancestors did. I'm asking us to deal with the reality that, like, the systems that we exist in, economic, cultural, political, etc., were built by folks that were white and oftentimes intentionally to benefit white people, and we're still benefiting from that. Can we deal with that reality? And then I get a whole list of why they haven't. I've had it hard, that whole thing. Yeah. Hi. Do you have some talking point suggestions for folks?
You know what? Here's what's interesting about that. everything that impacts Black folks in America impacts white
folks
too.
Yes.
Okay. So when we even like we talked about like police shootings has been 4 years since George Floyd's murder and everything. White people numerically, we know statistically, of course, we're impacted more as Black folks, but numerically, because how many white folks are in this country, you're impacted by it too, particularly if you are in an impoverished community, right? Like yep. health disparities impact us more, of course, per 100,000, but it impacts white folks too. Like all of these things.
Yep.
So I think that because, again, we're taught so much implicitly and sometimes explicitly through this racial lens of, well, that's their problem. That's their issue. The problem with that is the problems that impact us will eventually impact all of us if it has not yes. already. The climate issue, I think, is the best example because it's not biased. You know, like right. it's going to get us all. Like we have to do something about this. But I always advocate for people, you know, and I think that kind of goes into the conversation I had on the PBS documentary. But like having genuine conversations with folks. And like you said, it's like I didn't say, you know, for example, you were racist. I just questioned what you said. And I want you to understand how that may come across.
Yeah.
Can you, you know, like, do you understand and do, or where did you get that from? I want to just kind of tell you why I thought that was problematic, you know?
Yeah. That's as a grown person, I've gotten to the place in my life where I really care about the way that my words impact people. In fact, it's my job every day on the radio, but on that interpersonal basis, I care. And if something I say or get wrong or the tone I use has a negative impact on someone, I am accountable for that. Maybe on occasion I disagree, right? Or maybe the person's highly sensitive. Okay, but they still feel that way. I don't frame apologies anymore. I'm sorry you feel that way. No, that's right. Not an adult apology. An adult apology, if you screw up, or you care about the way that your words impact people, is, I'm sorry I said it in a way that made you feel that way. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Let's take a listen. Mr. Krim mentioned the PBS documentary. This is Listening with Curiosity. Divided We Fall, Listening with Curiosity. This exchange, when I saw it on LinkedIn, Ernest, I was like, yep, that thing right there. Because what the lady's saying is messed up. And she knows it when you start asking her about it. Let's take a listen.
For me, it was when Obama got elected, not because of his color, because of the people that came out to vote and did not study things or ever vote in any type of politics or anything. They just went, they saw a color, they voted.
And then can we hear the second part of that? Yeah.
I just have a genuine question. Why do you assume that everybody that, or most people that voted for Obama did so because he was Black, when you also have candidates, Jesse Jackson in the 80s?
I didn't say he was because he was Black. I said people who have
Who didn't.
No, I said I do not disagree with him due to his skin color.
And you said that people only voted for him because of what?
They came out of the woodwork.
Why?
They've never voted before.
Then what galvanized them to vote?
His color.
Their skin color. That's race.
I'm not racist.
I didn't say you were. I asked a question.
We got to laugh. Because I'd cry my eyes out if I didn't. I'm not racist. You're asking her in the most literal way to explain what she meant. The first thing she said, they did people voting who did not study things. Like, lady, do you know what Jim Crow was? Like, do you have any idea? Black folks used to have to take tests to vote. Like, what are you, what?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Never voted. As if, you only get to vote if you voted before. I see. That's not the way. Where's that in the Constitution?
Yeah.
What happened after that? Because I haven't had a chance to watch the whole documentary. What happened after that conversation?
So, for those listening, please watch that. So
I'm going to check it out this weekend. Yep.
Yeah, It originally came out in 2020. It was filmed in January of 2019. So, of course, we missed a lot of what has happened since then. But we came together to have this conversation by the producers, of course, as a response to 2016 and seeing if we could find some common ground. It was re-released last month. So part two that has some extra commentary. So basically, you know, what I found during this experience was, you know, we don't have enough conversations with each other. I know for me, I'm very like radical in the way I feel about like loving people and wanting people to be treated okay. It's like, it shouldn't even be called radical. I like to say I'm normal, but whatever, you know, but like I never thought that I could sit down with people who I vehemently disagree with and have cordial conversations about politics. And we did. And it made me realize that we often get behind these devices and we scream and yell at each other. I say all that to say that we did not agree on everything, of course. And I'm very curious to know what that would have looked like post 2020.
Right.
There were some extreme situations like hers, Kimberly's situation. We never really resolved it. We just didn't talk that much after. And she is one of the only people who did not find a common ground with everybody on that show.
Mm.
Yeah.
The documentary is called Divided We Fall, Listening with Curiosity. It has been re-released. We're going to put the link for the entire documentary in our show page for today. So if you're looking for it, you can go to civicmedia.us. Find today's show, the 28th of May, with Mr. Ernest Krim III. You'll find that link. Can you stick around for another segment, Ernest?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Awesome. I love it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media Radio. Don't go anywhere. Your farm update is next.
You just lost one. What a bomb bomb.
I am the least racist person there is anywhere in the world.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you not have plans tonight? Well, I've got plans for you. The Brewers-Cubs game. First pitch is at 6:40 p.m. You can check out that game live on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. Or if you're up in Park Falls, WCQM 98Q Country. We got you on Oshkosh Air Support, WSS, and of course, WRJN in Racine, 99.9 FM, 1400 AM. And in Kenosha, 98.1 FM. Are you a Cubs fan? I know you're from the Chicagoland area. Or are you strictly a Sox?
Actually, I'm a very big Cubs fan. I'm from the South Side, but I love the Cubs. I grew up during the Sammy Sosa era.
Ah.
I've done some collaborations with them recently on social media, too.
That's great. Well, listen, my guest this half hour, Ernest Krim III, I'll forgive him for being a Cubs fan.
I'll praise him for it. Congratulations. Yeah, that's great stuff.
Yeah, both of you.
It's very sad yesterday. Although today marks the 1 week anniversary of the last time they won.
Yes.
So that's fun.
Five losses in a row. Yeah. Brewers are up 4.5 games. We were talking a bit about the documentary that you are featured in. Again, that the PBS documentary will be, the link to that will be posted in our show notes. It's called Divided We Fall, Listening with Curiosity. One of the phenomena that I find exhausting, and I'm a white person, I can't imagine how exhausting and frustrating it is for black and brown folks, is when we start to talk about race, invariably, if a white person hasn't gained experience in talking about race and sort of accepting some of these subconscious biases and really digging into systems and understanding why we see disparate outcomes, you invariably, with like 100% batting average, will hear the person saying something like, well, I'm not racist. I don't see color. I'm colorblind. And again, I get frustrated with it. You know, the illusion that racial inequality was some problem from we've solved that problem.
Yeah.
Or that creating formal equality, in other words, I call it the shell or the fig leaf of legal equality on the books, somehow immediately translates into true equality or equity on the ground is something we're still grappling. And it's this knee jerk. It's like, I'm not calling you racist. I'm saying, can we talk about this?
Right. Let's talk about the system.
Yeah, to talk about the system. Like, if everybody had truly equal opportunity, do you think we'd still be seeing such disparate outcomes? And then you start to poke at what's really, I mean, how do you, you know, when you're confronted by this, Ernest, and I really appreciate you talking about this with me, because I know it's exhausting. It can be re-traumatizing for folks to hear all this. We're up on the fourth anniversary of Mr. Floyd's murder. You know, all of this is, it's a lot. And it's gotten more intense in the last 4 years. When people start saying stuff like that, how do you move past that and engage past those sorts of statements?
Yeah, I've learned to not take it personal. I try to look at these situations comparatively as best I can. Of course, I cannot relate to, you know, living the white experience the same way a white person cannot relate to my experience. But I try to imagine what it would feel like if somebody called me something that I was not comfortable being called. It would make me defensive, right? So I simply give the information, give the facts. I speak from what I've lived through, what I've seen, what my parents have told me generationally, things like that. And I leave it at that. If anybody wants to argue with that, you can do that in the comments with somebody else. But most times I won't, unless I'm feeling that way that day. You know,
someday I got some appetite for it. Yes.
Some days I'll make space for it. But I think it's important too, that, you know, I look at it like this. I didn't learn how to navigate through this country as a black man from my school. I just didn't, right? I had talks at home. The culture, like my neighborhood, my parents, the church, the black church, all of these things taught me. Me and my dad had the talk, you know? Yeah. And I just don't know if that happens the same way in white spaces, right? So if I'm getting this level of information about how to navigate culturally from my end out of a basis of survival, why would somebody who has been immersed in privilege have to do the same? So when I'm having that conversation, I look at it that way. And we don't do it in school. Like, there's no curriculum nationwide that says we have to make sure we're teaching our kids that racism is wrong. That, like, we teach, like, be kind, right? We say be nice. We don't really dig deep enough. And we're having these debates right now. So they don't even want our kids to learn the truth. So you have to understand from that man. And lastly, We speak of history and these relationships in a very logical way. And I should say a false logical way, because we say, oh, these disparities exist. The cause of this is because black people aren't working hard enough, aren't as gifted, aren't as intelligent. And because that false logic is fed to a white population or just people in general, we assume we don't have to do any reflection as a culture to actually dissect what the truth is.
Right. Well, I've often said to people, you know what privilege is? Privilege is assuming something ain't a problem because it doesn't affect you personally. Like, oh, because I haven't lived that. That means it doesn't exist. Well, I had a caller a couple days ago. We were talking about women's issues. And he said, well, there's no prejudice in workplaces. And he's talking, right? I said, sir, how would you know? You're not a woman. Why would you doubt women tell it? It just, there's this, fundamentally to me, there's this point that you want to get to where it's, you have the courage or the integrity to be humbled and to be humble and open to someone else's experience and know, hey, they've walked a different path. Maybe it might make sense if I want to live in a way that is radically empathetic. Right, which I think is a value most people in the United States, Wisconsinites, folk from Illinois, that we share, is like we want to live in community. We want our neighbors to do well. We want our family to do well. Radical empathy to do that, to be humble enough to listen to somebody else's story and to believe them. It can be different.
Yeah.
One of the posts that came across, I think somebody put it up in response to one of your shares on LinkedIn, talked about six things to do to be anti-racist. And they were pretty simple. Like, speak up if you hear someone say something that's racist.
Mm-hmm.
Teach your children to celebrate differences of all of us in humanity by actually acknowledging that we see color, right? You're not doing anybody any favors. In fact, you're disrespecting people's experiences. I'm colorblind. Well, that must be nice for you, because the only people that are colorblind are white people. I've never, can you imagine a black man? I'm colorblind. Like, I've never heard a black person say that. Here's what I think somebody just posted this as well. Like, a white person walking up to another white person and be like, I don't see you as white. Like, we've never heard that either. Like, I guess that's not a thing. The third thing was acknowledge your privilege. Do a routine check of your own biases, because we all have them, myself included. Read books and engage with pop culture and all sorts of media that features diverse characters from all different kinds of authors and creators. Learn Black history and listen when people of color share their lived experiences, and do your own research. Yes. Basic things.
Yes. Basic things. We complicate it so much, right? When I speak to companies that are majority white, a lot of times the questions I get let me know that a lot of people are scared of being wrong.
Yeah.
Because we're stepping into a space that is unfamiliar to us. So we're afraid of getting our feet wet, because we say, well, what if I say something? What if I do? What if, like, and that's going to hold. That's almost like, again, thinking of it in a broader spectrum. That's like, you'll never achieve what you're supposed to achieve if you always navigate around the what ifs. You have to just make that step in the right direction to understand nobody's perfect. Like you said, you have biases. We all have them. The best thing to do is to question. If you're drawing a conclusion about a group of people, you need to say, well, where did that come from? Self-reflect. It shouldn't always have to be me or Maggie calling you out. Call yourself out.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that. When I was, I think I was maybe like 19, it was summer break. Maya Angelou came to speak at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. So I took my books, you know, I was like, let me get some favorite, like, fangirl before that was a term. And she talked about this, and she said, if we're trapped by language, if we're so worried about saying the wrong thing that we can't have these discussions, we leave ourselves in perpetuity in this stuck place. And that for white people, it is our collective responsibility to do the unsticking. Because if you accept that at one time our laws were racially segregated, were oppressive, like, we're looking to privilege white people. If you accept that that was the case at one time, is it fathomable? Is it possible that some of the systems, the legacies of that privilege still exist? And then if so, who does it hurt or help if you never grapple with the difficulties, the challenges that language and talking about race entails? Well, it benefits you. So let's get unstuck. Don't ever be trapped by language so that we can't have the conversation, right? It's
exactly
building up that muscle. And I've had black friends of mine say, Maggie, hey, you said it this way. And I, you know, let me tell you what that triggered in me, what felt like. Yeah. And I, hey, well, how would I approach that differently? And here's how you talk about it. Great.
Yeah.
Learned. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you. I'm sorry. Right. I'll get it better next time. And to just try to build the muscle culturally, and hopefully starting that in schools, which is why I'm so glad you're out there doing what you do. Tell people where they can find you on the socials, Ernest.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody can find me on Instagram and TikTok at MRCrim3. That's C-R-I-M. That's one M and the number 3. I'm on LinkedIn too. My full name, Ernest Crim III. I'm posting content almost daily. I'm available for, of course, content, speaking engagements, consultations. I have 2 books. And I think, just to kind of echo your point, it's very important for us to realize that where we are is where we start, you know, because as somebody who was born and raised on the South Side of Chicago, I wasn't aware of how my neighborhood looked compared to the whiter side until I was able to take a bus to that side. I was bused to a white school, just for people to see how relevant this stuff still is. In the same community where I went no longer has that busing program to integrate their schools. But I had to be, if I did not see that other side, I wouldn't have had that perspective. Open your eyes to see what it really looks like on that side of town. Understand, like you said, Maggie, you didn't create it, but what can you do moving forward to make this better? Go to a school board meeting, You know, go to a city council meeting. You don't have to be a superhero. We don't need superheroes. We want teams where everybody's playing their role the right way.
I truly believe we are wired for empathy. And we've gotten to this moment where it seems we're being told that everything is zero sum, that it's you versus your neighbor. That is not the America that I know. That is not the way that we think of one another. We are wired for empathy. Lean back into it. Right? Lean back into the things that connect us, and learning different cultures, history, having a more full picture of what our nation's birth origins were doesn't subtract from you or your child. It enriches us all, because that's reality. Man,
Juneteenth is a great place to start.
Yes, it's coming up. Remind everybody what Juneteenth is. We got about a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, Juneteenth, it speaks to the fact that on July 4th, 1776, Black people, for the most part, as a collective, weren't free. We didn't gain our freedom as Black Americans until we secured it after the Emancipation Proclamation at the end of the Civil War in 1865. So when that 13th Amendment is passed in 1865, Black folks in Texas don't find out they're free for 6.5 months, hence June 19th. That's Juneteenth. And they started it there, and we celebrate it nationwide now.
And maybe y'all should go learn the origins of the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. It ain't just for June 19th, everybody. My guest, it's been such a pleasure, Ernest. Thank you so much. Ernest Krim III, author.
Thank you.
Media personality, educator extraordinaire. Thanks so much, Ernest.
Take care.
All right. We'll be right back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
I am not a racist. I'm an idiot.
Welcome back, Wisconsin, and the entirety of America. You can listen to Civic Media wherever you are in this beautiful country.
You can listen to it outside of the country.
You can.
We got a regular coming in from Germany. Back with his mom and hangs out with us. It's good.
You can always check us out at civicmedia.us. You can go get the app from your favorite app store for free. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. Thanks again to my guest this past hour, Ernest Krim III. I love watching his little encapsulated, whether it's on LinkedIn or Instagram, X, TikTok. Extremely listenable doses of history. History for all of us. I wanted to close out the hour, you know, Mr. Trump made a whole lot of hoo-ha about an appearance in the Bronx. I mean, first of all, I think rule one, never believe any reports of crowd size from anyone in MAGA land.
That was like the first thing they did.
Yeah.
You didn't have to. We had the most people for anybody ever for any inauguration, as if anybody ever cared or measured that beforehand. But that was their first thing they ever said, Maggie. I don't get it.
It's a lot.
Crowd size is important.
Except it's not. Voters. That might be important. Yeah. Whether you talk about the gold sneaker stunt, the appearance, the staged sort of events that Donald Trump has had, these claims that he's done more for Black people than any, it's facially ridiculous. I'll talk a little bit more tomorrow about some of the recent policy proposal from the Biden campaign. Also, some of Mr. Trump's more specific recent act. He actually retweeted a video shared by Candace Owens, where she was narrating something. She's like, George Floyd was not a good person. And he just retweets
that. Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. Sorry, it's he wasn't a good person. We can just kill him. That's good. Great. Mm-hmm. Cool. Great. Thanks. Thanks for solving that. That really made that better.
Bananas. And don't believe all this narrative about black and brown folks fleeing the Biden. That's a lie. The polling has showed that the differences from the last election cycle are very small, all within the margin of error. It's all hoopla. I thought we were talking about this before the show, Brian. It's like, let me lay out three scenarios that white people should think of saying or doing to other white people.
Right in the middle of.
To just try to explore our own potential biases. If you're a white person, can you imagine in the middle of a conversation with another white person, just sort of interrupting while the other person's talking, be like, you know what? You're so well-spoken. You're so articulate. Like, that would never happen.
Well, maybe if you're talking to, you know, let's say a horrible white person from the trailer who doesn't speak really correctly, and then they just happen to be able to speak in a Shakespearean accent. What? How achievement? I'm already digging the hole as I speak.
Yeah, it's bad, Brian. I was like, no.
I know. That's the point.
It wouldn't even happen there. There's another one. White person talking to another white person. Well, in the midst of the other person speaking, interrupts them, starts moving towards them, and is like, oh my God, can I touch your hair? It's like, that has never happened once.
It has happened to me before. It really actually has, because people like my beautiful, your soft, curly hair. But don't do that to people.
It's creepy then,
Don't do it to the pregnant ladies either.
Yeah, don't touch pregnant ladies' bellies. But here's my favorite example of this is you're in a work meeting. There's a disagreement. And the white person looks at the other white person and says, "You're being very aggressive. Why are you so angry? You need to calm down." Like, can you imagine saying that to a white dude at work?
That from what I understand, and in my personal experience, when you yell at someone to calm down or tell them they are being hysterical, that's a fun word to say too. That has some really
the
great
root, root of the word hysterical.
Yeah. But yeah, when you do tell someone to calm down, it usually doesn't end up with them calming down, I found.
Well, like this happened just this past week, right, with Marjorie Taylor Greene inciting a bit of a verbal spat, and then why are you getting mad? Stop yelling.
What, are you offended?
Yeah. It's just totally ridiculous. Tomorrow I've got Tom Paulsiewicz, Navy veteran. We'll talk more about some of the things that Joe Biden has done, especially related to benefits for veterans and getting them the medical care that they need. I just want to tease this out. In March of just this past year, Joe Biden directed that the Veterans Administration open up eligibility for toxic exposed veterans to enroll in veterans health care without having to prove a service-connected disability first. That's huge. If you're not a veteran and you haven't navigated these systems, it's like there's all of these hoops. Joe Biden just tore down one of the hoops. Also, regardless of your deployment location, tore down another hoop. This is huge. He did it 10 years earlier than what was required under the PACT Act. Here's the fundamental point when we talk about race in America. Our country has never been colorblind. And if you believe and you want equality, you got to actually deal with the inequality. You can't deny reality. Be like, oh, it should all work out just fine. And you especially shouldn't be doing that when you're white folk. Unseemly. That's it for this Tuesday edition. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together. I ain't nobody's fool.
better get yourself a new one.
So many people are walking around now without legs and without arms.
Stop shaking your head again.